everyone. Southern Hospitality, we're on. It's September 5th at 10 a.m., and we've got an awesome show planned for you today. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
I'm Dana Barrett, and I'm screwing up over here.
Dana's multitasking. I have the easy job on this show. Our guest is looking at us wondering if we've got everything straight today. And we do, George. Don't worry. George McCarrow is here. George McCarrow Jr., who is the co-founder and CEO of Ted's Montana Grill. We're so excited to have you. We've been talking about this show ever since I booked it. So welcome, George.
Oh, thank you so much. And by the way, I wing it every day, so I'm perfectly comfortable.
I mean, some days I feel like we have it all together, George, and then there's days like today.
That sounds like the restaurant business.
It's true.
We're the only business that orders, receives, manufactures, produces, sells, delivers, and collects for its products all in one day. So we never know how it's going to go, and our reputation is only as good as the last time we took care of you. So, you know, we work on the edge all the time.
You know, it's true. I am going to jump off quickly on a tangent. I owned a retail business at one point that had a very, very small coffee bar in it. And people would say, well, why didn't you just turn it into a restaurant? Because I was a bookstore, and we were in Boston this weekend at a bookstore, the Trident bookstore, which also has a full service cafe in it.
Right.
And so people would say to me, well, why didn't you do that? You could have stayed in business, because obviously bookstore can't support you. Duh. And I said, I didn't want to be in that business. I don't know anything about it. Even though I went to school for hospitality administration, it's been a lot of years since that happened. And you're right. I mean, there's so much you have to understand about how many customers are going to be coming in, how much to order.
All that.
There's so much more than just your average put something on the shelf and sell it.
Well, people don't understand. The only thing predictable about the restaurant business is that we're unpredictable.
Right.
And the fact is that you never know how many people are going to come in.
Right.
And so, you know, forecasting and all that business planning is a real unique set of events that has to all fall in place. And listen, with modern technology and computers and smart people, they get it done a whole lot better than we used to. But it's a wing and a prayer a lot of days. So really, y'all look very organized this morning, was what I was trying to say.
There you go. There you go.
How does that differ? I'm jumping around. But how does when you're talking about one restaurant and you're in one part of town and you start to get to know, you know, that it's going to be crowded when it's Dragon Con, or it's not going to be crowded when it's snowing or whatever. How does that differ when it's a chain?
Well, basically, operating a group of restaurants is just applying the same things over and over again. But it's also important, which is what we try to do, is to become part of the local community and to understand the community and where you've located the restaurant. We don't see our businesses as just another box on a corner, which a lot of chain restaurants do. We're a small group of restaurants that enter neighborhoods and become part of that community. And by assessing that community and being involved in the community, then we learn the business flow. For example, Decatur downtown operates on a different cycle than the restaurant in Midtown, or certainly you brought up our restaurant down here on Lucky Street, where we're event driven. So we try to understand the local community before we go, while we're building the restaurant, and as we do business in the community, we try to understand that, and that helps us. But it's still the same principle, which is you've got to try to estimate the number of guests, prepare the right amount of foods, and count what people ate over the last few weeks, and then figure they're going to eat it in the future. So yeah, it's a guessing game.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, let's start back at the beginning, now that I'm trying to organize things.
Okay, you guys, Elizabeth is
like
actually the practical one.
Flow.
Yes.
No, I mean, Ted's been around for a while now. You guys first opened January 2002, so that's
correct.
10 years.
Right.
Now you have 44 restaurants. So talk to me about when you and Ted were first sitting down tossing around this concept. What was like the vision and the idea that made you say, yeah, we've got to do something like this?
I mean, I was, you know, I'm the founder and was of Longhorn Steakhouse. I met Ted through a series of events. One of his daughters worked for me and things, and he was trying to launch the bison industry, which he believes is good for the environment, and I agree. It's a great American icon, the only animal natural to North America. And the industry was struggling because they were growing lots of new bison for production, which is the only way to keep them alive and healthy, by the way. So, you know, it's not about endangered. It's about creating a great gene pool to create a commodity. And so I got involved with that, and the problem was that marketing was difficult. The big restaurants, there wasn't enough. The small restaurants wouldn't take enough. It was a real disaster. So I went to Ted and I said, Ted, I've got this idea for a classic American grill. I think gourmet hamburgers are on the upcome. And by the way, I was right again, years ahead of everybody else,
yeah,
which I get very little credit for, and I'm not bragging. But, you know, we were the first gourmet hamburger place, $10 for the greatest hamburger you could eat. Now there's a plethora of chains. But I said, I've got this idea. I think we can introduce bison into that. He said, George, here's what I think. There's four reasons why I'll do this. One, I agree with you that a restaurant chain could help market bison. But I'm in it because I'm the largest bison rancher in the United States. I want to protect my investment. I want to protect the future of my ranches so that we have a commodity that we can keep cash and keep those ranches alive and well. And I want to help the industry and the bison in general. So we had a four-pronged approach. We quickly solved the first three. We've doubled the size of the herd of bison in the United States. Worldwide, it's been well accepted. It's no longer emu or ostrich. It is really a real red meat protein that is good and good for you. By the way, top five foods women should eat for iron replacement. Richer in omega-3 fatty acids than salmon. 97% fat-free if you eat a bison filet. And the only place you can get a bison filet 365 days a year is at Ted's Montana Grill. And we created this, and as we went out across the country, we saw exactly what we expected. Americans came, people from the United States came, ate. They wanted it. They went to their grocery store. They asked for it. Now Whole Foods sells as much bison as they can get their hands on, Kroger, Safeway, all around the country. So we launched a real niche industry. It's still a small industry, but we've been successful. That was 2001. We opened the first restaurant in 2002.
You know, you mentioned that women should eat bison, but from a marketing standpoint, I think Ted sort of is very manly. Do you feel like case?
You know, that's a moniker that we're disappointed in, in a way, but in another way, we're not. What I did architecturally and conceptually with the concept is create an authentic turn of this 19th century. I have to say that now because we're in 2012.
That's right.
19th century saloon, which were very, you know, really beautiful turn-of-the-century woodwork and mosaic tile floors, and I took a lot of the masculinity out of it, frankly. The beautiful artwork that's from Ted's collection. And then the initial menu, I'll agree with you, with, you know, 20 kinds of burgers and chicken grills, but we also had salads and light desserts and healthier food. And we've really moved ourselves in that direction. I mean, we serve salmon, trout several different ways, shrimp, crab cakes, 14 different ways to eat a healthy salad, et cetera, et cetera. We get labeled because of the decor more masculine than we really are when you eat the menu.
Yeah, I mean, I've eaten there and it's delicious. And I never felt like, oh, there's nothing on the menu for me. Certainly not. In fact, well, I think maybe I've had salads there. I think I've had chili.
Well, we've got a
maybe.
Great new house-made veggie burger, et cetera.
Yeah.
Decor-wise, I mean, it's a lot of wood. It's wooden floors. But it's very authentic. And one of the things I wanted to do was it's timeless. And so really, if you look at the decor of Ted's Montana Grill and compare it to lots of classic restaurants that have been around over 100 years, it's timeless in the way that it's built. So it didn't want it to be a fad in terms of design. For, you know, diners were really hot in the 50s. They got hot in the 70s. Then they got hot again in the 90s, and
right,
then they're kind of out. You know, modern architecture, as wonderful as it is, kind of goes through phases.
Sure.
We're sort of like a button-down shirt, a good pair of worn-out blue jeans, or a pair of loafers. You know, we're just not going to go out of style.
Well, also, I think you can't really make a mistake going more masculine than more feminine. Because, I mean, if you had a foofy-doofy, girly-whirly little place, yeah. I made that term up.
I love that. Foofy-doofy, girly-whirly.
Yeah, you know? If you had a foofy-doofy place, I wouldn't even.
Right. Well, if you had a foofy-doofy, girly-whirly kind of place, then the wives could not convince their husbands to go there, or women
That's
couldn't
right.
get their dates to go there. But if you have a masculine place, women will go.
Right.
It's unfortunate. We're much more accommodating. We're
well,
the more accommodating
and
sex.
But women are primarily the driver of the decision.
Right, but they're trying to accommodate their dudes.
Exactly.
They're like,
and
come
so
on.
So we give the best of both worlds. I mean, what we try to do is be a classic American grill that features a wide variety of healthy food. The thing that's important about Ted's that I can never seem to get the message out on is when we say we make our food from scratch. Now, lots of people say that, well, everything starts from scratch. So my old company, for example, they could say, well, we serve fresh food. Yeah, they build it in a commissary. They freeze it, put a bunch of emulsifiers and suspenders in it, and send it to the restaurant. And they heat it up for you. We make our own croutons. We squeeze 40 lemons for lemonade. We cut our steaks. We grind our bison and beef hamburgers in the temperature-controlled butcher shop right before lunch and right before dinner. I mean, we get fresh fish every day. I mean, everything we do is truly, truly cooked as if we were in your home and cooking for you at Ted's. That's why the display kitchen's there.
Yeah.
Now, you know, there's advantages to all these things. The clear thing that I believe about our industry is we've gone way too far into manufacturing business and not stayed enough in the hospitality and restaurant business.
Yeah.
And just like we're turning to farm to table, y'all know I own a little restaurant called Canoe, and we were farm to table in 1995, but
before it was chic.
2 years ago, it became a fad. You know, Jerry, our partner, had the first organic garden with Scott over at Horseradish Grill in 1994. So, you know, the restaurant industry, high-quality restaurants cook fresh food, do farm-to-table, buy locally, just every day as part of their business.
Right.
And I just think that as the dining out public should be more interested in finding those restaurants than going just out to get nourishment that you can get in the frozen food department at Kroger.
Yeah, we are talking about nutrition and nourishment this morning on the Good Morning Atlanta show. And I mean, you've been kind of ahead of your time several times. So does that get frustrating, George? I feel like people are now more demanding the things that you're talking about, fresh food that they know where it came from, that it's hand-prepared right before you're eating it. What do you see on the horizon as people start to embrace more of these concepts?
Well, first of all, it get mildly frustrating because, listen, I'm an innovator, and you know I take credit in the fact that I'm not a copier, and all things have roots somewhere. But I was innovative at Longhorn, I was innovative at Skeeter's, I was innovative at Canoe, innovative at Aria, and very innovative at Ted's Montana Grill. The fact that some people don't notice it or it's hard to tell your story, that's one thing. So the fact that we were first to be ahead, I'm proud of that. And as far as the future goes, I do believe that the next generation and the aging baby boomers are going to realize that nutrition, as well as taste and creativity, all go together. And that, you know, the facts are that the more nutritious your food is the closer it is to the resource, the less time it's been on the shelf, so to speak. And I hope that the dining out public continues to recognize the independence. You know, we talk about right now all these political deals. The auto industry was 3 million people, and I'm not saying that that wasn't important. The restaurant business employs 13 million people.
Yeah.
We're the largest private sector employer in the country. We give more people jobs at every level, and some are career jobs and some are temporary jobs while you go to college. Some are jobs while you're going through a tough time in your life, or you need a second job, or you have children and you have to work off hours. What our industry provides is so incredible to our economy, and then on top of it, we don't outsource anything. So I hope that people go out and recognize the local small groups of restaurants like Ted's Montana Grill, like other independents in our area, and support them first.
Absolutely. You've made a number of commitments to the environment. I mean, everything is to do with how the restaurant runs. I don't even understand. The goal is to be 99% plastic free. And when you think about all the plastic that a restaurant uses, I can't even fathom how you're getting to such a bold goal.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
Well, I mean, actually, it was a challenge at first, but you know, you can buy products and use products that simply are easier on the environment. They aren't right. For example, I wish we didn't have to have a straw at all, but I'd rather have the paper straws we have that'll degrade in a few hundred days in a landfill than 100 years for a plastic straw. I'd rather use wooden stir sticks that really aren't all that great because we're cutting down trees to make toothpicks, but they're better than plastic straws. You know, we recycle, we compost. The three restaurants in the city area in the zero waste zone in just 4 months last year recycled 60 tons of compostable refuse. And it went right back into the system. So it's really not as hard as people want to make it out. It's a change in behavior. And our team buys into it. I don't know if you know this, but our restaurant down the street is off the grid. I mean, Ted put up solar panels. We're 100% off the grid. We compost there for the entire building. We recycle everything we use. Nope, actually, we use, when we say we use plastic, it's because we have plastic lids on the to-go containers because our kids kept putting the wrong food in the container, which is aluminum. and then, you know, we have unhappy guests. So I had to let them see through to make sure it's right. That's the only plastic we ever have in
the
restaurant.
I want to say one of the things I appreciate about all of what you're saying is that there are, you know, when you talk about the term farm to table, that, you know, you've been doing it and good restaurants have been doing it all along, buying local ingredients, making everything from scratch, et cetera. And then this term comes along. And all these new places pop up and they claim to be doing it as a marketing gimmick. They say, oh, we're farm to table, come to us, when the good places have been doing it all along. And I think it's environmentalism is the same way. I think they're the responsible businesses, restaurants and all businesses have been trying to do that for quite some time. They're just not marketing it. And now you get these people coming along saying, we're green, we're this, we're that, come to us, when the reality is that responsible organizations have been doing it all along. And frankly, I would rather go somewhere that's been doing it all along and not trying to impress me with it.
Right.
They're just doing it because it's the right thing to do.
It's like everything in marketing, right? There's buzzwords. So fresh, made from scratch, farm to table, blah, blah, blah. What you have to know is know your business, just like our business knows the community. Know where you're spending your time and energy. And are they really community involved? And I want to add one other thing. So, yeah, I know of a big company. I won't mention it. but it's in Florida and owns lots and lots of restaurants. They've got a 150-page document because they went out and changed two light bulbs in every one of their restaurants, which made an environmental impact. That's right. But we did it all the way. You know, so just I think that it comes down to this. The way I look at environmentalism is it's back to the future. I grew up on a dairy farm. We had an ice house. We made and froze our own ice. We had a well. We had cisterns that collected roof water and we used that for our gardens and the rest of it. We milked our own cows. We grew our own vegetables. We canned our own foods. So when you hear a developer go, wow, I made this sustainable building because I put a cistern under the parking lot. Okay, this is just old technology being reapplied.
Sure.
Now, there's new technology that helps also, and that's good. One of the other things that I think when we're talking about supporting local restaurants, if you don't mind, is one of the things I'm most proud of about our team is that we're locally involved and we give back more than we take away out of the community, hopefully. One of the things we're doing this year, and I have to get this in a shameless plug, is for Share Our Strength, which is something that I've been involved with for over 20 years with Pano Caritas. It's a No Kid Hungry campaign coming up the 16th of September. We're doing it for the whole month. We're actually doing it for the whole year. Our little company made a $150,000 pledge for the year. You can go into the restaurants that are participating the week of the 16th and really the month of September at Ted's. Make a donation. They'll give you some sort of an incentive. We'll give you an incentive the week of the 16th. We'll thank you very much because there is, you know, 4 out of 10 kids in Georgia go to school hungry. 16 million kids are food starved in our country, and it's a shame and it's a crime, and the money is there. And I want to give Governor Deal a plug. He's helped us. We asked him before he got elected. He's followed through with his word. The state of Georgia is a model state right now. We're getting those resources together through Bill Bowling at the food bank, and we're putting everybody together, and we're getting kids fed 365 days a year. Because isn't it a shame that the day that the youngster that's hungry dreads most is the day he goes on vacation?
Right.
Or Friday afternoon when all the rest of the kids are celebrating?
Right.
He's going, how am I going to eat Saturday and Sunday?
Right.
So this is a really important thing. So please join in. hundreds of restaurants in your local community. Support Share Our Strength, support No Kid Hungry campaign. Jeff Bridges is our national spokesman. We are absolutely, this month, we need to raise a lot of money to help these kids, and go to your participating restaurant, including Ted's Montana Grill. Make a donation, spend a little dough, eat a great meal, save a kid, help them go to school with a full tummy.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, we were talking about it this morning. It's going to be one of the major topics at Georgia Forward coming up mid-September as well. On the whole, I think the state is, is really...
Absolutely. And childhood hunger in Georgia, it's a big focus for a lot of our leaders, both in the business and the community and the government right now.
What's interesting is that's the other thing that I would say about our industry. Because we hire young people, because young people want to be active, and when you talk about environmental and sustainability, they understand it and they're willing to participate. They feel good about it. Our customers feel good about it. Our communities feel good about it. And our businesses embrace. And the restaurant industry does more in the local community than they ever get credit for. Think of a guy like Kevin Rathburn and how many times he's out donating his time, money, and energy to good causes. Or Jerry Clascala at Aria, or anybody, Pano Caritasis. Any of us, you know, we're a small group of competitors, but we all work together for the betterment of our communities where we do business. And this is just an example, and there's more of that. So when you really look at a classic, wholesome industry for our country, is feeding people is necessary. It's enjoyable. It's fun. It's a social outing. We feel better. We make it affordable. And we give you freedom of choice. And so when you really think about our industry, we really are the hospitality industry. We make people feel good. And that's what Ted loves to do. That's what I love to do. And that's what we're proud of.
Well, that's why I think the look and feel of Ted's Montana Grill is so perfect, because it is classic and it is like a throwback to the time when food was real. It came from plants and animals, not from plastic bottles or cans, right? When relationships were real, when people connected.
A simpler time. Is what we try to do is harken back to a simpler time when, you know, America's table is the most bountiful table in the world. We are so fortunate to have the opportunity to eat the fruits, vegetables, proteins, and other healthy items that we have in our country. You know, and so if you take that and then you look at the restaurant industry and how it's contributed to the health and well-being of our country and our society over time, you know, unfortunately, I fought this for 40 years. You know, it used to be, and it's a lot better now. But boy, when you went home and told mom and dad, including my dad, I'm going to get in the restaurant business, oh, we got to get him down to the shrink right away. What's wrong with him?
Talk him out of this.
And it's sad because the truth is that we have very upwardly mobile, real jobs that everybody can get, and if they're good at it, work through. Do we work odder hours than normal? Sure, but I've never been a 9-to-5 guy. But we have the great benefits, great careers, great jobs, and we give back to people's health and well-being in their community simply by making them happier. And happiness is the most important thing in life. If you're, you know, if you look at some of the people in the most abjectly poverty-stricken countries, they're much happier than people in the United States, because money does not make you happy, but food does. So go to a great restaurant, have a great meal, laugh, giggle, have fun, and you'll be happier than you were before you got there.
I like that.
George,
I like food,
I
and I like to be happy.
I love your passion for the restaurant business, and you've obviously been able to see a lot of the impacts that you're talking about of a well-run company and what kind of impact they're able to create for people, for individuals, in their careers, and in their communities. What keeps you driving forward? I mean, you've achieved so much success. What keeps you from just saying, yeah, it's been enough?
Well, first of all, I have a young, beautiful wife. And she won't let me retire. No, just kidding.
Always blame it on the wife.
I think our whole country's got to go through a social change and realize that we are living longer, we're living healthier, and we're healthier when we're active and we have something to do. And when you love what you do, my work has never been a job. I never set out to be financially or a big-time success. I love the restaurant business, and I really wanted one little Longhorn on Peachtree Road, play some golf, drink some beer and have a good time. And it turned out to be a very successful company. Things I've done have been successful because I'm passionate about it, because I'm compassionate with the people that I'm involved with, and I care more about the health and well-being of the overall than just myself. Having said that, I think our whole, and this is getting into, without getting political, you know, I mean, we've got a crisis on our hands. People are living to be 85, 90 years old, and our social systems aren't geared to support them for 20 and 30 years. And we're perfectly capable of working till we're 70 years old. And we'd be healthier for it. And so for me, it's like, okay, I'm just not ready yet, and I don't really ever want to not be active and work. But after I'm 70, the 8 more years, 9 more years, I think, you know, I'll be willing to slow down a little bit. But we've got to think about that in the way we do business, because our systems, our social support systems, just aren't geared for people to work for 25 years and then retire for 35 years on the dole. It just doesn't work.
Absolutely. It's important for the overall economy that there's some kind of a shift in the mindset.
Well, think about this. Delta Airlines and other airlines now, they used to be 60. For a pilot to retire. It's a pretty intense job, right? Flying a Boeing 767 around.
A lot of responsibility.
So they retired at 60. They now retire at 65. That's the same age as somebody that's, you know, doing something a little bit less stressful, not to take away from anybody's workload. But they're retiring at 65 also. Some people at 62. I'm not saying freedom of choice, your choice. I just personally don't want to sit on the couch for 20 or 30 years and do nothing.
Absolutely. I don't think you could.
I don't either.
You have way too much energy and yeah. way too many ideas, and there's so much exciting stuff going on. So are there celebrations for the 10 years?
We've sort of been celebrating all year. It's kind of our personal birthday party. Our big celebration was to commit this huge commitment to share our strength so that our team could focus on something that would make them feel good, something they believed in. We have a lot of young people that work for us, lots of young mothers and fathers that work for us. And so we try to focus on child issues, and our child issue is no kid hungry. Let's get these kids fed. The programs are out there. Let's raise the money. So our real celebration was to raise $150,000, which my team is a little stressed with me because I was somewhere and I said, oh, well, we were going to do 100, but we can do 150. And so now they're struggling to get it done. So I'm pleading with everyone that's listening, please come to TED's this month. Make a small donation. We'll give you something and a big thank you and a big hug, and you'll help feed a kid. You know, for every dollar you give us for No Kid Hungry, 10 kids get fed.
Wow.
So it's a really good ratio, and your dollar goes a long way. So that's really our soul. Other than that, we did a couple of promotions. We did a special burger, and, you know, it was okay. It wasn't a big deal. You know, there's no sense blowing our own horn. We'd rather just be great for 10 more years and become a better and better restaurant company and better community citizen.
Awesome. Well, we're glad that you were able to stop by and tell us all about it today.
Well, thanks. You know, my office is just down the street. So y'all ladies, make sure y'all come down, and here's some incentives for you to send some of your friends down for a discount at TED's.
Grabbing a bison burger real soon.
I think we will, too. I'm getting hungry. This show always makes me hungry, and today is no exception. Now I feel like I can smell burgers. Like, I want a burger right now. We need smell radio somehow. Yeah, I don't know how we're going to work that out. I'm trying to work that out.
Well, people can see pictures and see the menu and find the Ted's Montana Grill closest to them at tedsmontanagrill.com.
And where will we actually find Ted? At which one does he hang out?
You know, Ted lives above our building.
Oh, so he might be.
I don't know if you know this, but it's a real quick story. At CNN, you know, he lived in his office.
Yeah.
And so he built a penthouse on that building. We put a restaurant downstairs. He's there quite often when he's in town. As a matter of fact, Ted's a very loyal customer. He's there and at the one on Midtown, and he's here quite a bit. This summer, he's out west on his ranch and taking a little bit easy. But he'll be around a lot in the fall. So come by. People that see him, Ted's wonderful. He goes through the restaurant. He says hello to everybody. He stands out front, tells them all to come in. So
that's awesome.
They can enjoy experience. He's a regular guy. Ted's a real icon and a real pleasure to have part of the Atlanta and the community, but part of the world community. And he's one of the most incredibly inspirational guys I've ever met. So come by and see him, too. We'll put a wooden statue of him up, and you get a picture made next.
That's awesome. Love it.
George, thanks. This was fantastic. TedsMontanaGrill.com, everyone. I'm Elizabeth Gordon.
And I'm Dana Barrett. And this has been Southern Hospitality. We'll see you next week.